This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, January 8th. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this week, Dillingham Mayor Alice Ruby joins as we continue our series of looking back to 2015 and forward to this year with area elected officials.
We are not going to be able to depend on the state, the federal government, the city to do a lot of the things that we will just have to return to doing for ourselves. But I do have to say again, we're rural Alaska. We can make this work.
Celebrations of the birth of Christ continue this week as followers of the Julian calendar gather to sing, worship, and go starring.
So you go to every house and you sing like what we did, and you bless the house. And when you have three or four stars like this, at the end when they say the three last verses, they kiss.
We'll get some advice on what to do if you're feeling a little blue this winter.
You know, in years that there's no snow, is there a possibility to ice skate? Is there a possibility to go on long walks across the tundra? People have to capitalize on the conditions that they have.
Plus, a little preview on some of our area basketball programs to see what's ahead for the coming months, like those Lady Angels who may be the team to watch.
They have it in their blood this year. They're ready to do it. They want that state title, so they are hustling and working hard, and their team dynamics are pretty amazing.
Those stories are coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. The price of oil continued to fall, with ANS West Coast priced at $34.82 a barrel on Wednesday, a dollar less than the day before. Brent crude hit an 11-year low at less than $33 a barrel on Thursday before ticking back up slightly. The financial outlook for Alaska shows no signs of improving, and credit ratings agency Standard & Poor dropped the state's credit rating down a notch from AAA to AA+. In a press conference this week, Alaska Governor Bill Walker said the news wasn't good, but also wasn't likely to have a major impact on state borrowing in the near term.
To tie it to a dollar amount, if we borrowed $1 million a day, we paid an additional $1,000 per year on that $1 million as a result of this bond rating adjustment. So it's not a major downgrade, but it shows a trend.
Walker used the same press conference to announce broad restrictions on travel by state employees and a hiring freeze across most state agencies. He did not say how much that crunch might save.
But as far as a hard number on that, that would be a guessment at this point. I'm sure there's a way we can track it. We don't want to hire a bunch of people to track it.
According to Walker, positions that protect life and safety, such as state troopers, will still be filled, as will revenue-generating positions. Preliminary harvest numbers from the winter moose hunt in Areas 17 B and C were put together this week. Speaking Monday, wildlife biologist Neil Barton said he knew of 31 bulls taken and expected to hear of a few more.
Last year, I think we took 34. You know, over the last 5 or 6 years, I think the average is in the 40s. So I wouldn't be surprised if we'd get close to 40 by the time we're all said and done. So I'll see what I can get out of that.
Hunting for bulls and cows is now open in 17A around Togiak. Board of Fish member Reed Morisky of Fairbanks announced some draft criteria for new policy on how the Fish Board will address future proposals related to coastal erosion. Morisky laid out the proposed guidelines during a meeting of a committee formed during the Bristol Bay Finfish meeting in December. That committee met for the first time Monday.
One, determine if proposal is directly related to coastal erosion impacts on set gillnet operations. Two, does the set gillnet lease comply with State of Alaska Department of Natural Resources shore fishery leasing program? Three, has the proposer clearly identified the history of the erosion in the area identified? Four, if the proposal involves adjacent lease sites, will these be affected? If so, to what extent?
Several set netters had asked the board to help solve problems with their fishing sites that were created by erosion. The committee will make its recommendation to the board at the upcoming AYK meeting in Fairbanks. President Obama laid out a series of executive actions he intends to formalize aimed at curbing gun violence in the U.S. this week. His measures did not sit well with Alaska's congressional delegation, including Senator Dan Sullivan. The freshman Republican senator said it's not just the Second Amendment infringements he's concerned about. It's also the way the president is going about it that he says he has a problem with.
This administration has tried to move forward with additional gun control measures that have not gotten through the Congress. Then he takes executive action that is of a very dubious legal nature. And it's not just me saying that or other members of Congress, whether it's immigration, whether it's the expansion of the EPA's powers. through executive orders. These have all been ruled by courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, as having exceeded the president's executive authority.
One of several lawsuits against Extreme Seafoods is nearing resolution, as a ruling in civil court this week held that the seafood processor, which operated only during the 2014 season in Bristol Bay, owed a fisherman the $2 a pound he was promised in writing preseason. Drifter Fred Hansen hired attorney Tim Toomey to press his case. Toomey spoke with KDLG News after the ruling was released.
Mr. Hansen approached me unhappy that he had not received what he was promised by Extreme Salmon, specifically $2 a pound for the fish that he had delivered to them. Instead, they paid what they claimed was the prevailing bay price for the fish and breached a written agreement with him.
While the court ruled in Hansen's favor, it asked for more evidence before determining the final settlement. Extreme Seafoods did not return to the bay after 2014. Several men are back in custody after an armed jailbreak in the village of Pilot Station Tuesday night. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says a family member returned 19-year-old Thomas Heckman and 22-year-old Dion Joseph after 22-year-old Dale Fancyboy and a female accomplice busted them out of jail.
We had troopers fly out yesterday morning and go to search the village and try to find the two escapees that Fancy Boy helped break out. We weren't able to find them right away, but we were still in the village when one of the family members showed up at the jail with the two escapees and turned them over to troopers.
Fancy Boy allegedly threatened the unarmed guard and village police officers with a shotgun. The city of Anchorage saw its first homicides of 2016 when a man returned home and found a woman and her daughter shot and killed. A 15-year-old boy is in custody as the suspect. And Bethel police say they're continuing to close in on those they believe were responsible for setting fire to a new alcohol treatment facility that burned in October 2014. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation upped the award recently to $20,000 for information leading to the arrest of those responsible. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org.
My name is Kyla Klaus. I'm 11 years old, and I miss when there's no snow. We can't go sledding, we can't go snow machining out on the tundra, and we can't go get wood for the house.
Hi, my name's Travis Ball, and I live up at the lake. We live on an island on the lake, so we have to travel across the ice. So we were kind of stuck there for a good week right after Christmas because of all the warm weather and overflow on the lake, and it was really bad, kind of scary. But today it froze just long enough to kind of run into town and grab some groceries and get back, so it's been really tough for us.
Two of our neighbors sharing thoughts on this winter's blues. We'll have more coming up. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Last week, we spoke with Bristol Bay Mayor Carl Anderson on his thoughts on the year 2015 in the borough, as well as what's ahead for this year. We continue that series this week with Alice Ruby, who was reelected in November to another term as Dillingham's mayor. She joined me yesterday and spoke first about last year's highlights for Bristol Bay's largest city.
Well, certainly in 2015, the president's visit was probably one of those events that we'll remember forever. Big thing, and you know, not just the president's visit, but the build-up to and the what's happened since then. It brought lots of visibility to the region, and some of that has been really good for us. You know, and I have to say, even though it didn't happen in Dillingham, the other big event, I think, that will go down in history was the Alucinuck Bridge. There's a lot of residents there that come and go here in Dillingham. They work here. But for most of us that grew up here, watching that bridge be built and then going up and driving across the bridge, you know, it's kind of one of those things that I suspect that the kids will, they're just nonchalant. Wasn't it always here? And the rest of us that took boats back and forth across that lake for most of our lives, that's a pretty big deal. That was a... That's another landmark event in this region, I think. And then, of course, you know, the fishery.
What was your takeaway from the 2015 season? It seems like this one was memorable to people for not all the good reasons necessarily.
No, that's true. Not all the good reasons. I think that probably the takeaway from it was that we had some warning. We knew that prices were going to be low, but who knew they were going to be that low? and also just how long fishermen had to wait to see the results. You know, there were October, November, fishers were still waiting for the final settlement sheets, you know, from their processors and, you know, hoping to further develop their own fishing operations and, you know, the uncertainty of what's the market going to be, is it going to come back up and all that. And we all know this is part of what, this is part of fishing. It's part of the industry, but it doesn't help when you're trying to figure out whether to grow your operation or get out of the business or get into the business. You know, it doesn't help.
We're a week into 2016. Let me ask your perspective. What is on the horizon this year for the city and for the residents of Dillingham? What challenges lie ahead? You know, one thing that stands out to me is I just don't think we're going to have a sled dog race again for Beaver Roundup.
Well, climate is definitely one of the things that's on the front of our minds. And I think things are changing. You know, we go through these cycles of weather and climate and everything else. So, you know, we're rural Alaska. We can roll with it. We maybe will end up having to have bicycle races, which I do remember once when I was a kid, there were bicycle races at Beaver Roundup. And maybe we'll have to adapt and we'll change. It'll come back around. It always does.
It will come back around, I think. That's the takeaway from this El Nino weather pattern.
Yeah.
Next year we'll be complaining that it's 30 below.
I know. The snow came. We have too much snow. And I do think this is going to be, this is, we've got challenges coming up. It's going to be a challenging year. But I do have to say again, we're rural Alaska. We can make this work. You know, we are not going to be able to depend on the state, the federal government, the city to do a lot of the things that we will just have to return to doing for ourselves and taking care of each other and kind of taking care of our own neighborhoods and families.
City council meetings are rather sparsely attended at times. Remind folks, what are some of the priorities the city is looking at here in the year ahead?
Well, when we're talking about city services, certainly two of the priorities still on our list is the water and sewer systems and the landfill. Those are a lot driven by the agencies that are putting requirements on us. There's regulations we have to follow. The incinerator at the landfill, we're still struggling with how to try to make that work. It was a necessity because the state said we could no longer operate a burn box. So we either had to bury refuse or we needed to burn it. So we chose to burn it and now to try to make that efficient so that it's not costing us so much. Water and sewer, you know, our sewage lagoon and our pump stations, those are all a high priority on our list. Which, by the way, you know, will probably not get funded by the legislature. Those are things we're going to have to do ourselves. And then also, you know, for the city, priority is going to be just kind of trying to protect the services we have. School funding for our public safety systems out here, our, you know, district attorney, court system, and so on. Those are issues that the city will be involved in during this next upcoming year. It's all going to come down to money, I mean, funding.
By the time we talk next year, do you think that the annexation petition will be on its way to the legislature and a fish tax in place by the 2017 season? And do you think that we'll have commercial sales of marijuana in Dillingham by this time that we speak next year?
You know, I don't know what to say about the commercial sales. Certainly, it will be legal in the state of Alaska to allow licenses for commercial sale. Here in the city of Dillingham, the council hasn't formally made a decision whether to allow licenses or not.
Okay.
You know, and then with the annexation petition, that's our plan, is that the petition will move forward. There is a schedule in place. The LBC is issued where, you know, between now and the end of February, they'll be accepting comments, and they've scheduled hearings in September of this year. So it's a slow process, but our anticipation is that we'll be collecting fish tax in 2017.
Okay. And just a couple of seconds remaining, your prediction, will there be any movement towards forming a borough in the Dillingham census area by the time I speak with you on this next year?
There will be a feasibility study completed. Part of the reason that's necessary is because finances, economies change a little bit. You know, a borough in this area has been looked at in the past. It was minimally feasible. Whether that still is the case or not, we don't know.
We might know a little bit more again.
We'll know more. Yeah, we'll know more.
Are you going to run for mayor of the borough if it comes? Alice, as always, good to speak with you. Thanks so much.
You too. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Yesterday, thousands of Alaskans joined believers in Eastern Europe and around the world to celebrate Orthodox Christmas. The Slavi celebration follows the Julian calendar and extends the holiday for days as church groups visit relatives and friends, sharing carols and food. KDLG's Hannah Colton followed a star to learn more about this Orthodox tradition and filed this audio postcard.
My name is Danny Wasley, and I'm with the Ecock Star. And so you go to every house and you sing like what we did, and you bless the house. And when you have three or four stars like this, at the end when they say the three last verses, they kiss. You see how the stars kiss, that's blessing that star.
Or like if we meet outside, well, it's like called Star Wars. Like we battle each other. We all sing at the same time. We try to get the other group to sing with us. I'm Maggie Carr with Portage Creek Star, and just my mom and her husband live there now. She's the leader. We're all first cousins and aunties and
relatives.
Yeah, we're all relatives. Well, we're usually only supposed to slavy 3 days. Like, that's how it was in the old days, that you only slavied the first 3 days. But we've, like, extended it. It's fun. So we just keep going.
Who's your star man?
This is Talon.
Your other half.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Talon Lundgren. My first year was last year after I converted to Orthodox. But I did in the past. I guess the tradition, the young male is supposed to do it, or young Orthodox male. It's a little bit of a workout. I mean, once you get like lots of people in a little house like this, it gets pretty warm.
There's some songs you hear the same over and over. Like, you'll hear it in English, then next time you'll hear it in Slavonic, or Yupik. Oh, Subdeacon John. I help the priest. It's a unique tradition here in the Nishigaak area with other villages coming around with their star compared to like Kostaquim, where if we went to another village, we just join with that star. Villages on the Nishigaak River bring their star to other places, and that's where we could hear all the, you know, unique traditional songs for that town or village. One time I was over in the Kostaquim area, and there's this old man talking to the kids about our unique tradition over in the Nishigaak, where we give the star person money. We donate the money to where over there the household will give everybody gloves or useful little things, tools, soap, washcloths, you know, little presents that they hand out. And then, you know, when we're done singing out of the house, we eat food that the house provides for us, which I really like.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Back with more in a moment.
My name's Dan Boyd. I'm not having to pay as much for my heating oil, which, you know, sadly to say, is a great thing. But boy, we're going to run out of water here before too long if we don't get more moisture in the ground.
My name is Gabe Andrew. I hope we have snow, because around here we do a lot of tradition hunting, because without no snow and they can't travel very far, especially with the creeks that are open or dangerous for the people.
Oh boy, a large part of those activities are based on my ability to get outdoors to meditate, but these wet, rainy winters really have given me the opportunity to explore a deeper learning about myself by accepting that change and incorporating that into my current meditations, into pursuing the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path to Enlightenment.
I'm Jacob Schulskamp. Since there's no snow, I'm just going to probably sit in front of my TV, binge watch my Game of Thrones and rain, and play a lot of PS4.
Hi, my name's Ed Boudreau. You know, I haven't really given it much thought, probably just playing a lot with my kids, and they're pretty happy no matter what, so they're having a good time. They're doing a lot of, like, crafts indoors, like painting and art projects and stuff, so.
Okay, my name is Sherry Graywall, and I think the most impact is Beaver Roundup, you know, the canceling all the sled dog races, anything to do with snow. We haven't had a decent Beaver Roundup in years. It really does suck because, you know, that's like the biggest thing here, especially for all the kids.
A few more of you sharing your thoughts on this winter with us this week. How quickly this season, which can really perhaps be the best time of the year, can turn to such a dreary period. K-Bear's Chris Stevens pretty well captured the mood of the winter blues one dark Sicily morning during season 5 of Northern Exposure.
Morning, Sicily. 8 a.m. Muchachos. Time to finish those flapjacks, knock back that second cup of joe, and get ready to greet the day. Temperatures creeping towards double digits as this solar drought continues. 23 days and an average hour and a half of sunlight every day. No relief on the horizon. Which only makes sense because there is no horizon. Our friends at the Weather Service are calling for another storm, and as we know, they've been batting 1,000 lately. Hey, let's check the social calendar, huh? Nothing. Total blank. It's cabin fever season, people, that time of the year when four walls feel like they're just going to come in here and choke the spirit right out of you.
Well, if only we had our own Chris in the morning. Getting a bit of the winter blues is not isolated to fictional characters in Sicily, and I can't help but think that this, the third dull winter in a row, takes shape. It might be affecting more of us than usual. For more on this, I'm joined by Pete Tallman, a licensed clinical social worker at the Chamai Community Health Center in Naknek. Pete, this winter blues, in a mild form at least, it sure seems to be kind of going around.
Well, Dave, you're right. People are certainly talking about that, especially with the winters we've been having the last few years. It's really hard for people to get out and do their normal winter activities. And for a lot of people, those activities are really coping skills. They're ways to manage our weight, manage our sense of well-being, to get some exercise and some fresh air, and to deal with emotions that come up from all the other things that happen this time of year, whether it's family get-togethers or conflicts in the workplace. And so when we don't have snow, we don't have good conditions to get out, it makes it tougher for people, for sure.
Pete, how do we sort of identify some symptoms of this winter blues or depression, and what is some advice you have for how to sort of deal with it?
Well, you know, certainly there is a distinction between feeling depressed, which every single one of us feels from time to time, maybe a little bit more so when we can't do the things that we love, and what would be determined to be like a clinical depression. And that's a depression that's been kind of identified by either a medical doctor or a mental health professional. Some general symptoms of depression that we usually see are, you know, feeling sad, people feeling hopeless, empty, people that find that they've just kind of lost their motivation or interest in doing things. We often see eating connections. People feel like they eat too much or they don't eat enough. And people just generally feeling tired not getting good sleep, not having enough sleep. If people are experiencing those kinds of symptoms, they might benefit from doing things to take care of themselves, trying to eat well, trying to get enough sleep, trying to drink water. One of the things that people might do this year is explore activities that have not traditionally been things that they looked to. So, you know, in years that there's no snow, is there a possibility to ice skate? Is there a possibility to go on long walks across the tundra? Spend time with people you care about. Connect with friends and family. And really try to communicate to others how you're feeling. If that's not enough or that's not effective, then I'd really encourage people to reach out to a mental health professional.
Now, on the severe end of this, a person could begin to exhibit signs of suicidal risk. But there's a misconception, I believe, that this time of the year is the highest when in fact, it's actually not.
You're right, Dave. The highest time of year for suicide is spring, actually. And unfortunately, this is not something that's completely understood. There are a couple different theories. One theory is related to the social connections and the ways that our social environment changes as the warmer months come on. Some people feel left out when that happens. Some people feel isolated, alone. There's another theory that it has to do with the biological factor, that there's an inflammation connection or other processes. When people are experiencing depression at any time of the year, the things that we talk to them about is, number one, how can we have a good safety plan to make sure that it doesn't become life-threatening? And how do we help people see that the temporary circumstances they're overwhelmed by are not permanent? And that is often a very hard thing for people to see when they're in the depths of a deep depressive state.
That's a topic for further discussion down the road, but I'd like to thank our guest, Pete Tallman, licensed clinical social worker at the Chimai Community Health Center. Pete, thanks so much.
Okay, Dave, take care and get outside.
When the hunting season ends and the trails aren't open, what else is there to do other than binge watch great TV shows and listen to great radio? Watch high school basketball, of course. Last year, the Lady Angels, after falling by 1 point to Metlakatla in the semis, took third. And the Dillingham Wolverine boys team fell by 3 points to that team of giants from Glen Allen in the championship match. It was exciting stuff. This week I called around to get a little preview of this 2016 season. Paula Singley is the athletic director at Bristol Bay. She says this might be the year the Lady Angels go on to claim the 2A title this coming March.
I think they're going to come off pretty dynamic. They have it in their blood this year. They're ready to do it. They want that state title, so they are hustling and working hard, and their team dynamics are pretty amazing this year as well.
Okay, who did you lose from last year, and who's stepping up as leaders on the team this year?
We lost just one senior last year, and that was Michaela Wilson. And so this year we have three seniors, and that's Hannah Moorcroft, Tia Thompson, and Ruth Nishukpuk. And those three girls are the starting five, and they're a huge asset to that team. Hannah's pretty explosive down there underneath the basket, and Ruth controls the ball. And, of course, you have the 11th graders, Anna and Riley. At this last tournament, they described Anna as silky smooth, and that was pretty fun to read.
Okay, the Lady Angels are going to be a team to watch. Tell me about the boys' team.
The boys' team, you know, they're still rebuilding. You know, they have two seniors. One is a new student, Ethan Johnson, and the other one is Noah Smith. So they had some struggles at that big tournament in Anchorage, but, you know, they've been working all week on all the things that they need to work on, and I think that once they get those skills mastered, by the time they come up to playing against Dillingham, it's going to be a good show.
Dillingham lost some senior talent last year, notably from the boys' side, with Kenny Savo, who had emerged as one of the 2A division's top all-around athletes. Principal Bill Schwann tells us he thinks the Wolverines may find themselves in a bit of a rebuilding year.
We got a lot of good young kids coming up. The enthusiasm is what I like. The kids are hungry to play and learn, and I think that's what's going to move us forward. You know, we lost some real key players over the past year, but got a high-energy group of kids. I'm excited to see them play.
The Lake and Penn School District has four teams in the 1A division, a boys and girls at Port Allsworth and a boys and girls team at New Haven. Ed Lester is the athletic director for the district.
Port Allsworth has for the girls, they have an energetic team. They're just kind of starting off. Last year was kind of their first year in a five-man program. They just have the numbers, but they're excited and they're energetic and they're getting wound up and ready to work hard this season. So I'm looking forward to see how they do. Port Allsworth, they had a five-man team last year, and they did all right. They were obviously kind of getting into it. They were bringing some of the younger players, developing them really well, and they've got some really good senior leadership on that team, and they have a lot of character on that team. So they're going to be fun to watch. New Haven girls graduated some pretty good seniors last year, but we've got some young players that have come on strong. They're going to be in it this year as far as trying to get back to the state tournament. And the boys for New Haven also went to the state last year as a two seed out of our region. They graduated one senior that was a pretty good player, lost one who wound up moving out. But we have a young team that's got some talent there in New Haven. And we've got senior leadership on that team that we're hoping will step up and bring those young players and develop them. And I think they're going to get better and better as the season goes on. New Haven doesn't have a gym right now. We're still under construction. We're hoping to have that finished up here in the next 2 weeks. So that's going to be interesting to see how that affects their play this year.
Where have they been able to practice in these last couple of weeks?
Well, we've been doing a lot of conditioning.
So, you can run wind sprints just about anywhere, I guess, huh?
That's right. So a lot of conditioning just kind of looking at some different things, but we'll see how it goes.
One thing I'll say about the Malamutes, they have some of the best ball handling and ball movement skills of anybody in this area. They whip that ball around fast and really strive to find the open player down low. And I think a lot of teams should take a page out of that playbook.
Well, you know, we have a lot to, you know, our gym, like I said, is going to be finished here in 2 weeks, and it's actually, the gym's dedicated to our longtime coach, Bob Rogdowski. It's actually, it's going to be called Coach Bob's Court. He's been coaching there since the late 70s, and he's still coaching our boys. And that has a lot to do with our discipline, I think. You know, it's a program. It's not a season-by-season thing. It's a program. The kids know what they're getting into, and it's kind of affected our boys and our girls team just because we have that consistency coaching.
Again, that was Ed Lester. Now, there's one team we're not going to see this year. They suffer not from a consistency in coaching, but a consistency in the number of players. Last year, the St. Paul Sea Parrots showed up for a tournament in Dillingham, and the varsity squad of six, five boys and one girl, brought an unmatched level of intensity and skill, but fell short just barely to the Wolverines. Here's Coach Michael Baldwin in St. Paul.
Yeah, it's not good. We have no high school team this year. We have two boys and some high school girls, and none of the high school girls are really interested in playing ball, and the two boys were neither. And so this year I'm coaching a middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and I think I have eight players at this time, co-ed. And we'll be traveling to New Studio Hawk here in about a week and a half for a middle school tournament.
Coach Baldwin says he thinks some of the middle schoolers are looking to go to high school elsewhere, and he's not sure how long it'll be till the Sea Parrots from St. Paul Island field another high school team. Lots of great action to come out and catch tonight and tomorrow. That's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at kdlg.org. Keep the feedback and ideas of stories you think we ought to cover coming. Dave@kdlg.org is my email. Thanks to Connor Ito, Molly Dishner, and Hannah Colton. I'm Dave Benninger. We'll see you back here next Friday.